Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead. Take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch. Now, clearly there are bigger things happening in the world right now than VAR and financial fair play. We have seriously considered cancelling the show as we are recording as Russia advances into Ukraine. When faced with a profound moral dilemma, we like to ask ourselves, as I think most right-thinking people would, what would Sepp Blatter do? And we know that Sepp would have his head firmly in the sand. So as a release, I'm going to give you some good news, Chris.
Yeah?
Great news. The car is back.
The car?
The ball-delivering car, our favourite thing from the Euros, is back.
The giant remote-controlled car.
Well, this is better than a remote-controlled car. And sadly, it wasn't in a football match. But clearly, the rugby fraternity have seen the car and decided this is the way to go.
Yeah, we're having
and
that.
Warrington Wolves were inspired, listen to this, to get a six-year-old girl to deliver the match ball in a go-kart. All right. Unfortunately, by the time they put the oversized helmet on her and she was so near to the ground in the go-kart, she couldn't find the man in green to give it to and just drove round and round the pitch, delaying kickoff until, and this is even better, the club mascot, unsurprisingly, a six-foot wolf for Warrington Wolves, wrestled it from her grasp. It must have been a terrifying experience.
Did the wolf claim to be her grandma during the protest?
I'm sure that's what was in her mind.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, just speaking of match ball shenanigans, there was a thorny dilemma arose this week when New Zealand and Liverpool defender Michaela Moore, made-up name, scored a perfect hat-trick of own goals, left-foot, right-foot header, and then was substituted in the 40th minute because she was obviously on a mission in a 5-0 defeat by the USA in the She Believes Cup. And I'm sure we all do believe. But Adam Hurry, a man on at Football Clichés, asked, what happens to the match ball, you know, in this circumstance? Does it put her on its mantelpiece? And of course, a ball wouldn't have a mantelpiece for its trophies. That would be ridiculous. Yeah. It would have a plinth. And a little car for going to the shops. Did you see in the Winter Olympics a Finnish competitor suffered a frozen penis in the freezing conditions?
I didn't see that. I don't know how I missed it.
No, surely the headline must have leapt out. Good news, his testicles were fine, thanks to global warming.
Have you ever had frozen penis?
No, at that time I went into Iceland and took too long to choose pizza.
Of course.
In other news, Cristiano Ronaldo has apparently sold his apartment in Trump Tower in New York for less than half what he paid for it. And, you know, there's something funny in there somewhere. I can't put my finger on what it is. He had an apartment in Trump Tower. That's quite funny. He lost a shitload of money. That's quite funny. There's something there. You know, listening at home or walking the dog, you know, invent your own joke. There's something in there. Cristiano Ronaldo had
And you want to think that Donald Trump designed the apartments in Trump Tower as well, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think he installed the gold toilets, didn't he?
Yeah, I was going to say there'd be 9 toilets and 1 bedroom.
one of the toilets for important classified documents and the other 8 for God only knows what.
Yes, of course. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Now, knowing you as I do, Nick, I'm sure you'll be as keen as I am to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the release of Blue is the Colour back in February of 1972. And interesting how the song has lingered in the Chelsea mythology, considering the little-known fact that you can share with the world.
Well, I can share it with you, yes. Blue is the Colour is, in fact, a song of failure.
Yes.
Because Blue is the Colour... They all think, or the younger Chelsea fans think, it's to do with winning the FA Cup in 1970 or possibly the Cup Winners' Cup in 1971. But no, Blue is the Colour was released in 1972 for the League Cup final, which indeed Stoke City won beating Chelsea 2-1.
And we'll be having a full 50th celebration episode next week.
Yeah, definitely. So every time I go to Chelsea, which obviously is getting fewer times, they sing Blue is the Colour, and I want to go, no, you don't. I should just take pleasure in it.
Mind you, though, Oldham still play the Boys in Blue, which is our loser anthem from the 1990 League Cup final. But the thing is, it's not like we've won every other bloody possible trophy since.
No, exactly.
Or indeed had anything at all to celebrate for the last 31 years. Counting, which will bring us on nicely to...
Very quickly on that, we had a League Cup final single too.
Yeah, we'll be with you.
We'll be... Yes, but what was funny about the We'll Be With You it was written by Jackie Trent and Tony Hatch, who wrote the Neighbours theme. But the other thing that I found particularly funny about it was we released a follow-up single called We'll Be Together. And you thought, no, you can't do that. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, someone should have said, Tony, Jackie, it's not about you.
Yeah, it's like having 3 World Cup songs, isn't it? It's just ridiculous.
Well, the Cameroon did, didn't they? Cameroon had their World Cup song after the World Cup.
Well, they did.
The World Cup, which was great. Anyway, before we luxuriate in the foaming, aromatic hot tub of the Premier League, let us clutch our penises like a Finnish cross-country skier and plunge into the wheelie bin full of ice cubes that is the very bottom of the EFL, where my team, Oldham Athletic, are showing distinct signs of life. Last week, you may recall, we crawled out of the drop zone for 6 heady minutes at Newport County before their late equaliser shoved us back into the bottom 2. Last Saturday, at home to managerless Bradford City, we secured a whole week of intoxicating security, climbing up to 22nd with a 2-0 win. Goals from Hope, who it appears springs eternal, and John Betjeman tribute act Davis Keeler Dunn again. 4 goals in 5 games for him since the messianic return of the new boss, brackets, same as the old boss, brackets. Not the least impressive thing about the turnaround that John Sheridan has engineered in the last 5 games is that he's doing it mostly without being able to call on the guys who arrived during the January transfer window. Mike Fondop-Tallam, our new centre-forward, out with a groin injury. He's been feeling his groin, apparently. I'm not sure that's how he injured it. Topi Obadai was only fit enough to come on with 10 minutes to go. Alex Hunt came on with 1 minute left. Christopher Misalou has made a difference, admittedly, but just that one defensive midfielder. But basically, Sheridan's getting a chew out of the squad that was playing so badly just a month ago. I mean, we seem to be happy to surrender the lion's share of possession now. I think this is quite an interesting thing to see. Those stats are always a bit misleading, aren't they, the possession ones? Because they count fanning around at the back as possession just as much as doing anything remotely threatening. But now, instead of playing...
And failing to take a throw-in counts as possession.
Counts as possession because you've got the ball. Yeah, you've got the ball.
You've got the ball.
Yeah, yeah. But now, instead of playing safety first, trying to keep the ball, those same Oldham players are looking to go forward, and it's amazing to see, and it seems to be as simple as that. So now the other teams in the bottom third of Division 4, currently trading as League 2, are getting a bit twitchy. Lots of chopping and changing suddenly going on at the clubs that suddenly smell the sewage between that open manhole cover. Leighton Orient sacked their manager to the soundtrack of mid-80s Phil Collins. no Kenny jacket required. And our friend Brian will be particularly pleased to hear that line, having tried very hard, you remember when we did Who Ate All the Pies years ago, to get a no jacket required joke in when Spurs turned their nose up at French manager Aimé Jacquet.
Aimé Jacquet.
Brian listens to this while walking his dog, apparently, hoping against hope for no jacket required to make an appearance. And so there you go, Brian. And according to the news, there was an earthquake in Walsall this week, which is a hyperbolic way to describe their surprise win at runaway leaders Forest Green. But we're comparing our upturn in form to the resurrection of Jesus, so who are we to talk? Anyway, the Walsall quake, according to the old joke, caused 75 pence worth of damage. Someone dropped a cornetto, but they'd already eaten most of it. New manager Mike Flynn's bounce came to a shuddering splat on Tuesday with a 5-0 reverse at Swindon. And just yesterday, Carlisle reacted to the seismic shock of finding themselves actually behind Oldham by sacking Keith Millen, who, their new Keith, who'd only been there since October. Inspired by later Phil Collins, Paul Simpson is going back. He won the division as player-manager 16 years ago and more recently won the 2017 Under-20 World Cup as coach of England. I didn't realise he was in charge of that. Solanke was playing, Calvert-Lewin, Adamola Lookman, and Lewis Cook of Bournemouth. So they're clearly hoping for a Simps erection. No, that doesn't work, does it? That doesn't work at all. Meanwhile, Bradford, who we beat last Saturday, have appointed Mark Hughes today. Just 5 days too late for the grudge visit to Boundary Park. Because he, of course, kick-started our 28-year decline with his last-minute of extra-time equaliser at Wembley. He's like the devil to us. I mean, hopefully we can get him the sack next season. We have a good record of getting Bradford managers the sack, if we're still in EFL 2, touching wood. He managed Stoke, didn't he, Mark Hughes?
He certainly did, yes.
For about five years. Not that long ago.
Stoke, Manchester City, Blackburn.
Yeah. When he came to Stoke, did you take him oatcakes? I know you sometimes do that with
oatcakes are, let me explain, the local delicacy.
Yes.
Yes, I've done it to a couple of managers in my younger years.
Yeah, did you not take, Steve Cottrell? Did you not go around to
Steve Cottrell got oatcakes from me, and indeed Mick Mills.
Mick Mills,
Both of whom were notable failures as managers at Stoke City. But not down to the oatcakes,
no,
I think.
No, England World Cup captain Mick Mills. Mark Hughes, his real first name is Leslie. I think more people should know that. I think more people should know that about him. Yeah, Leslie Mark Hughes, that's his name. Anyway, so as you said at the top, this week Vladimir Putin used the pretext of two areas of Ukraine having trouble with separatists to send troops across the border as what he calls a peacekeeping force, basically to make sure that he gets to keep those two pieces of the map. But it seems obvious now today that was just the start of his move to invade and annex the whole country, which leaves the world on the brink of who knows what. I mean, it's hard to trivialise the importance of the imminence of World War III, but I think I found a way of doing it.
Good.
Does this mean Scotland will get a bye in the World Cup playoffs next month? They're supposed to be playing Ukraine. Or will they end up playing Russia, thus giving Putin two shots at getting to the Qatar Beanfest? Infantino loves Putin. He's dying to hang out with him in November. And Russia are already in the playoffs. They're supposed to be playing Poland, aren't they? And Poland must be getting a little anxious, don't you think, about that? I mean, they want the game switched from Moscow to Warsaw, obviously. But what would that provoke? You know, they have a border with Ukraine, Poland. There are already Russian tanks in Belarus, which is also next door. And they also have a border with Kaliningrad, which is a little Russian enclave, where the Russians had tanks, didn't they, very recently, looking at Lithuania.
And, of course, Poland shared the European Championships with Ukraine.
They did.
And are, you know, similarly a little worried about the presence of Russia.
Well, you would think they must be. Putin's master plan is to go and take back all the former satellite. Not that Poland were that, obviously.
No.
But Belarus and Georgia and places like that.
Lithuania, Latvia,
Estonia. Yeah, yeah. No. I mean, with a very spurious claim that these are historically Russian, because they were Prussian, they were German, Poland and Lithuania and Latvia and so on.
Okay, if we're going to say trivial things about very important matters, can I say, if that was to happen, it really would clear up the Euro qualifying
The
groups would be much smaller. Starting to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, but do the Ukraine players, if Russia, for example, invaded Ukraine completely in the next 2 weeks before the playoffs started, do the Ukrainian players then play for Russia? You know, because that happened in 1938, didn't it, with the Anschluss, the when Germany invaded Austria.
Austria.
And the Austria were among the favourites for that World Cup. And their players ended up playing for Germany. Yeah. But I think that's a very, you know, very distant possibility.
Yes.
What I think is interesting about it, and really the reason why I'm bringing it up at all, apart from the trivial World Cup qualifying thing, in what is essentially a football-based podcast, I think, is how many people are suggesting that football somehow has something to do, has a responsibility to act in the face of this Russian aggression, and people suggesting using football as some sort of weapon to bring pressure on the Putin regime. I mean, the Americans went for the Russian banks with their sanctions, trying to hit the Russian capacity to finance their war machine. I mean, I beg your pardon, their peacekeeping machine, apart from Trump, obviously, who's saying that Putin is a genius. But the Germans have applied their sanctions to the pipeline, the big oil pipeline, the Nord 2 pipeline, obviously very important economically and practically. But Boris Johnson came out very strongly saying that the Champions League final should be moved from St. Petersburg. I mean, yeah. I suppose, you know, you wouldn't want to give Vladimir Putin so many high-profile Western hostages, just in case. But then the Foreign Secretary came out, Liz Truss, said that English clubs reaching the Champions League final should boycott it if it was in St. Petersburg. And she said, I'd boycott it if I were them. And how would that work? You know, if Liz Truss got to the Champions League final. It's hard to see her winning the semi for a start, you know, let alone finishing in the top four the season before. But if you're the Foreign Secretary, don't you have more important ways to affect a geopolitical crisis than suggesting that an English football team would boycott the Champions League final if they got there? Surely there's some sort of diplomatic effort, there's some sort of military posturing you can do. Why is it football's responsibility to solve the world's problems? That's what I'm
saying. Well, I think you know full well that they like to mention football as much as they can because they think it makes them in touch with the common man. So that doesn't shock me that much. And they did do some offshore banking business, to quote the members. Mm. But he also mentioned Abramovich as one of the people that he wanted to freeze it.
Well, he's targeting only three of the very many oligarchs who own most of West London. And two of them are called Rottenberg, which makes me think that they're like made up. They're made up villains, these two. You know, they sound awful. But then the whole, all the noise is, oh, we should do something about Abramovich, who can't get a visa to even come back into the bloody country, you know, and is persona non grata in Russia as well. He's been going around collecting passports like, I don't know, like a kid collecting stamps. We said, didn't we, he'd got a Portuguese passport, he's got an Israeli passport, and if he gets a World Cup group, he wins FIFA. We said that at the time. But it's because of football's profile that we're supposed to be thinking, oh, we should do something about Abramovich, do something about Usmanov at Everton. You know, let's just punish the Russians we've heard of. You know, can we also stop playing Rasputin by Boney M? You know,
I think there's a lot of that, but I do think, well, it's two things. One thing, Abramovich, he backed away from that in the end, didn't he? Mm. And said, which this is just the most cowardly thing to say.
Yeah.
He said that he misspoke.
He misspoke about all the parties at Number 10 Downing Street.
Well, I know, but exactly. You know, it's just that drives me mad. But I think there's a wider picture, isn't there? Which obviously we've spoken about in this tons and tons of times, which is, you know, politics just stalks sport all of the time, doesn't it?
It does.
So you've got Winter Olympics in China, World Cup in Qatar, Champions League final in Russia, the Saudi Public Investment Fund doing the golf in Newcastle, Leeds thinking about touring Myanmar, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, the last World Cup was in Russia. I mean, all you need is sort of match 39 in Korea, and you've got the set. But it's always happened.
In North Korea, South Korea is lovely.
Hitler did the same thing, didn't he?
Yeah.
He did the same with his boxing. He did it with football. He did it with the Olympics.
With the 36 Olympics.
Yeah.
I mean, you see players getting stick, don't you, and getting fined even for daring to make any sort of political pronouncement or wear a T-shirt with a message on it supporting, I don't know, a union or something, or Marcus Rashford getting stick for standing up to the government on school meals. Anything praise also, but you constantly hear, oh, football and politics shouldn't mix. They shouldn't mix. Yeah. But then as soon as there's a thing where you can throw football in and make it look like you're doing something, it's the self-justifying bleat of people who do deals with Saudi Arabia all the time, you know.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think talking of individuals, I saw that Roman Yaremchuk of Benfica last night, who's Ukrainian, scored and lifted his shirt with a message of support. But of course, Ukraine also have history for this, haven't they? Because didn't they have the map of Ukraine on their shirt in the Euros, which included Crimea?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's another one.
Yeah, the Crimean thing, that was only a few years ago. And I think, you know, basically Russia just sticking their toe in the invasion bathwater, you know. I went like 3 years ago, just before the COVID thing. My sons and I went to Moscow, and one of the things we did when we were there, don't be doing that again in a hurry, but one of the things that we did while we were there was we went to the Museum of Russian History. The Russian History Museum, where there are some very interesting displays where history seems to stop when Khrushchev comes into power and then start again once he's gone. There was the 1960s cabinet was closed for cleaning, you know. But when you got to the end, the most recent exhibit was about the Crimea, about the Russian annexing of Crimea, and all the text and all the pictures were about how Russia had liberated Crimea and answered the call of its people, you know, and the whole thing was spun 180 degrees, you know.
Well, it's not that surprising, but interesting to look at. I mean, I was in Moscow in 1980 and arrived in my bedroom to find on my bed a book called The Truth About Afghanistan. So, you know, I didn't even have to go out to a museum. The one other thing about the Champions League final I find interesting is if Man City get there, and he might not be in the squad, but if Zinchenko,
he made a statement, didn't he, of support.
I missed that. What did he say?
Just of support and solidarity. Appalled at, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but you wonder if he would boycott it.
Well, yeah. I mean, should FIFA not kick Russia out of the World Cup, given that they've invaded one of the other countries in the tournament, still in the tournament at the moment? You know, I mean, isn't that like a minimum response that FIFA should make? Don't you think? I mean, you know, sports bodies obviously have a terrible track record of dealing with Russia. You know, with the Olympics, you know, they're somehow allowed to compete as the Russian Olympic Committee in order to evade responsibility for their massive doping program. And they're still, you know, they're still pumping illegal drug cocktails into 15-year-old girls.
Yeah, but to be fair, when the British athletes went in 1980, they competed as individuals because Britain had boycotted the Olympics.
I think Thatcher wanted to stop them, didn't she? But was
she did
was unable but the, to but get
the IOC through. Opened it up, and that's always the interesting thing, which is boring actually, but interesting to me. The most played anthem at the 1980 Olympics was the Olympic anthem, because so many people won medals who weren't meant to be there.
Who weren't supposed to be there, FIFA obviously are just so in lockstep with Putin. Infantino loves Putin and Sepp Blatter before. But didn't Putin proposed Sepp Blatter for a Nobel Peace Prize, didn't he? You know, and there's UEFA as well, who are in charge of the Champions League final, which is due to be held at the Gazprom Arena in St. Petersburg, which is Putin's hometown, apart from anything else. You know, just the sucking up goes way back. But Gazprom is a big problem, I think. Gazprom is a massive Russian energy group. They're the major sponsors of UEFA. And arguably, Gazprom money is what is keeping UEFA able to stand tough against the Super League, because they've got this guaranteed income, through a pipeline, if you like, from Russia. And so if the EU sanction Russia, UEFA are going to have to go along. You can feel the regret already. You can feel that they don't want to do this, you know. Yeah. Ah, well, Gazprom. You see it everywhere, don't you? Gazprom on the touchline boards and everything. The hell is that? What's that got to do with anything? But, you know.
But then I think that about Diners Club as well. MasterCard. Yeah. And indeed Coca-Cola and Budweiser.
Yeah, and I've never had a Continental Tire. No, that's true.
You should try one, actually. They're really good.
Well, you know, the worry, of course, is that, if you'd watched Seinfeld at all, you'd know that the Ukraine is weak, but you don't, do you? Do they mention Ukraine in Neighbours at all? No.
Not that I remember.
There was an episode of Seinfeld, anyway, where Kramer and Newman are playing a long game of Risk, which pivots on the possession of Ukraine, and Kramer is going, "Ukraine is weak," on the subway, and a Ukraine guy throws their game everywhere. It's very funny. You should watch Seinfeld. But anyway,
I should.
On a lighter note, if such a thing is possible. It's time for a quick update, just a quick update on the hottest on-off bromance of the season, the relationship they're all calling Tomalu Tukarkle, the celebrity couple to rival Brangelina and Bennifer, who seem to be finding a tentative way forward recently. I mean, they spent a bit of time apart, which often helps a relationship, doesn't it? It gives a couple time to take stock, realise what it is they want from each other. Thomas stayed at home in London, and Romelu went on a city break to Abu Dhabi and scored without him. And maybe that was the problem. I mean, certainly Thomas was highly motivated to jump on a plane at the last minute to see what was going on for himself. And now that they're back, Romelu seems listless, doesn't he? I mean, touches are so important, aren't they, for a relationship? And Thomas just hasn't been getting what he needs, you know? He's been lashing out as well, mocking Romelu's performance in front of all his friends, saying, this is not the time to laugh. Which means that it is, of course, the time to laugh.
It is the time to laugh.
I mean, look at Frankie Howard. When he says, "Ooh, don't laugh," that means laugh.
Yeah.
And Thomas is laughing in the picture with the quote in it.
It's an incredible thing to say. Yeah. I'd just like to... I wish you'd said that all of that with the R-tune music.
Yeah. Well, poor old Thomas. You know, Romelu's always too tired. That's what he's saying. Yeah.
Well, they had this thing about his touch map, didn't they?
Yes.
Did you see that?
It was an incredible thing. He had two touches in the first half, and one of them was the kickoff.
And he had seven touches in total.
Yeah.
And so, funny enough, it did make me think they should buy Putin, because he made more incursions into enemy territory than Lukaku had made on Saturday. Thank you all.
I played football on Tuesday night, and I think I touched my balls more than that. But still. Tuchel said, Romelu will always be part of the solution to the problem. Who shall I bench this week? But still, there you go. Do you see Romelu Lukaku's quote was a little bit gnomic? It said, "If you have to force it, it probably doesn't fit."
Right.
And you think, you know, you don't want to hear that if you're Thomas Tuchel, do you?
No, can there be any doubt that one of them is going to go?
Which one of them as well?
Yeah, but there was two schools of thought. Well, they're not entirely opposed. So Wright, Lineker and Shearer's view was, where's the support? He should be having players passing to him more. He doesn't make the runs because the passes aren't coming, and why aren't they doing it in training? And Sutton's view is he's hiding because these balls aren't coming anyway, so what's the point in him making the runs? But you'd have thought that this was something that a football manager could work out, wouldn't you?
It's always awful, isn't it, when Mourinho used to do this all the time, isn't it, where he picks out a player and points out the ways in which they're letting him down. You know, Luke Shaw, yes, exactly. And Lukaku's, he must be feeling it. He must be feeling the disdain from the manager, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Chelsea's not a happy ship currently, although they are the champions of the world. but Manchester United, there have been non-stop rumblings
about...
Danny,
he's the champion of the world, isn't he?
He was, former champion.
He was. Oh, that was a few
I think
years
he's looking
ago,
for right? a rematch with Chelsea. But non-stop rumblings still from Manchester United about discontent there. I mean, they try and squash rumours of a row over the captaincy between Maguire and Cristiano Ronaldo, then Fred starts saying it's really strange to be playing for an interim manager without any kind of long-term plan. And yet, you know, they came home from Madrid with a draw in the Champions League, despite, by all accounts, playing absolutely dreadfully in the first half. And did you see their action-packed encounter with Leeds on Sunday? Did you see any of that?
I did not see that.
Oh, because actually, you know, a really interesting game to watch, a really good game to watch. Because the build-up to it included some, like, blood and thunder tackling from the 70s, you know, the sort of thing. And usually that's not a good move to show that. because it sets up expectations that the game is actually going to be like that, and then the weedy no-contact tap ball begins. But that's what the actual game was like. Because it was so wet, there was so much water, players were going in for a tackle and sliding 15 feet past, which was and it was fantastic. It was like the most spectacular game. And Maguire scored the first United goal from a corner this season, which is a great statistic that I've been keeping an eye on. 139 corners without scoring. And it's a shame because, you know, Maguire is such a weapon for England, isn't he, from corners, especially by Luke Shaw, who's taken the United corners. But so it's bittersweet, like football itself, really.
It is, it is. It is. And there's definitely a lot going on there. But again, we've said this before, you know, if you've got a supply teacher in, the people are going to take the piss. And that's basically what's happening with Ragnar. Also, we've had Conte last night saying, after beating Man City 4-2 and saying that he would play with Kane, even with one leg. And then last night, they lose at Burnley. And he says, you know, it's not right in this moment to take the money. And if it is the fault of the manager, I shall go.
I'm ready to go if I'm the problem. He said, I mean, he's had an extraordinary few days because he was so happy after the Saturday night. I mean, you know, when the Kane last minute winner went in, the prancing that went on, you saw Guardiola bent double with his head in his hands, and behind him, Conte leaping around like a wild thing, leaping high into the arms of his team, and as you say, the Harry Kane thing he said after the in the press conference afterwards, which reminded me of Peter Shilton saying he'd give his right arm to play for England, which and he got nowhere near the German penalties with two arms. I don't think he got any closer with that one.
Yeah, Conte's celebration reminded me a little bit of David Pleat, I have to say.
Oh,
the Radiantish one.
Yeah,
he skipped onto the pitch.
Incontinent skipping that he did.
I
remember trying to explain the skipping that we wanted at when we did the end of the cup final in Bostock's Cup. To Tim Healy, we want you to do the David Pleat. He did a good job of it. But it has been amazing, hasn't it? And sorry, it's been amazing, the top of the Premiership the last few days, don't you think?
Yeah.
The City were 14 points clear a little while ago. And just after half-time on Saturday, Liverpool were 1-0 down to Norwich, which was exactly the sort of scoreline that knackered their title challenge last season when they suddenly started losing games at home to teams at the bottom. And City had Spurs to come on a losing run. And there, for a few minutes, the title was absolutely done, I think. Absolutely cooked. And people have been saying for a while, oh, Liverpool is still in it. And then you just had the sense that nobody really believed it. And then they knocked in 3 to turn that one round. City lost that brilliant game with a brilliant performance from Harry Kane. And then last night, Liverpool won their game in hand, which, you know, you can't ever rely on, and won 6-0. And, you know, did you see any of the Liverpool leads? I'm sorry to keep you. Did you see any of the Liverpool leads last night?
I was at Stoke Luton.
But the game wasn't on until Stoke Luton. Unlucky. But at the Liverpool leads, I was watching the late replay. It wasn't on live. And twice this thing happened. They went to a shot of Marcelo Bielsa on the touchline. And just as Martin Tyler was saying, of course, the Leeds fans absolutely adore the boss. Bielsa put a finger to his nose and emptied a nostril down the front of his anorak. It was absolutely fucking disgusting. And I don't like it when a player does it. It's a horrible thing to have a close-up on when a player does it on the pitch. But at least they're involved in some athletic... They're in extremis, if you like. But, you know, it's a small excuse. But a manager... And they went back to him for the other nostril full a little bit later. He snat all down himself, this late middle-aged man with no self-awareness. It was absolutely fucking horrible.
Well, it is horrible, but you know, when you're an older gentleman, as we both know, you know, sitting on a bucket can be exhausting.
Well, and he doesn't even have a fucking bucket. He's just miming having a crap, isn't he? Doing pantomime having a crap. But anyway, there you go.
Yeah, I just wanted to finish with Reading because it suddenly occurred to me, any of you, us who have had children in Sunday football teams, like the under-12s, I just love the idea that when they got rid of their manager, they then got the dads of all the players in and said, right, so we need somebody one of you needs to take over the team. Now, Thomas Ince's dad, you've had some experience in football.
It won't be long-term.
It's just to get us through the season.
No, I've got photocopying to do.
Anyway, we're going to take a break, and after it we'll have our guest. Our guest today is a comedian whose career has been inextricably linked with football, from Taxi to Training, in which he would interview players whilst driving them to work, to hosting Soccer AM, and most pleasingly for Chris, a regular character in the NBC show Ted Lasso. Having trained as a chorister, he's uniquely placed to give us a few chants from Blundell Park, home of his side Grimsby Town. You are very welcome, Lloyd Griffiths.
Thank you for having me, honestly. Bless you.
Yeah. We're delighted to have you. I want to start with Grimsby, if that's all right. A place I've been to many, many times and had that little walk from Cleethorpes Station and seen some quite tasty afternoons, actually, on the way to the ground. what was your favourite era? Who were your main heroes?
Well, I started following them when I was about 8 years old, and the first game was John Cockerell's testimonial. I'm not sure if you remember John Cockerell, brother of Glenn Cockerell. Southampton, yeah. So it was against Southampton. And so that era for me, you know, with the likes of Clive Mendonca, Ivano Bonetti, really stood out. I remember, like, when you talked about the plate of chicken on I Think It's All Over, I lost my mind. Like, I lost it. The fact that Grimsby was being spoken about on TV, just, you know, lose it.
We should perhaps talk about the plate of chicken, because not everybody will be familiar with it. But first of all, to go back to the signing of the Italians, which was quite a big moment for Grimsby as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was huge. There was the fact that he was owned by a conglomerate, which was very Tevez and Mascherano. I'm not sure who it was, but it was something that we'd never heard of. And then we had to buy him from a company and not a football team. And I think he stumped up half the cash himself. And then the rest of the fans basically paid for him just by bucket collections and like buying shirts and stuff like that. So it was a weird acquisition, and no one really knew why someone that had played at a level that he'd done in Italy, then decided to move, you know, to Europe's food town, Grimsby.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a time when many foreign players were playing in the leagues at all, and certainly not lower down.
No.
So it was quite a splash. I remember that. And they worked for you as well. You had some great results afterwards.
He was brilliant. Very tricky winger. Did really, really well and just helped the team. And, you know, off the pitch as well, it got us a bit of press coverage that we hadn't really had for, you know, a time. And so, yeah, it ended quite bizarrely, as well documented by, I think it was Luton away, and I think a plate of chicken was thrown. I think it was a fist that gave him the scar. I don't think it was a plate of chicken. I think it was definitely a fist. And I think that is on record subsequently. But, it's quite sad. And then you kind of went off. I think you played for Tranmere after. Maybe I think you managed Kilmarnock, I think. But
I think you might have gone to Dundee.
Was it Dundee? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
But, yeah, that was a crazy weird time for a local team like Grimsby.
But Brian Laws was, he's a funny old character himself. And obviously he's the one that inflicted, as far as we know, the injuries. Not a man really to mix with. He's one of only two professional footballers to have stolen a bus. I know that for a fact. But he's quite a hard man, Brian Laws.
Who was the other person that stole a bus?
Gascoigne.
Oh, of course, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay,
he was very a no nonsense character. And Grimsby have had quite a few no nonsense managers over the years. We had Alan Buckley, who no one really messed with, and the stories that you get from Alan Buckley's era of him almost, you know, driving along the queue of a nightclub in Cleethorpes on a Friday and Saturday night to see who was in that queue, and then almost players hiding to not get, you know, not get grabbed into his Ford Cortina. So, Brian Laws, I'd love to interview Brian Laws and just really get the inside info, because he managed Grimsby two or three times, I think, and I think did the same at Scunthorpe. I think he managed him three times at Scunthorpe.
Yeah, I love the idea of the Alan Buckley curb crawling being completely different, grabbing young professional footballers into his car.
Yeah, so let's not cancel him. He was doing his job.
That was a time when that was fine. Do you know what I mean? You're allowed to grab 21-year-old men into a Cortina.
Yeah.
There was a footballer called Tony Gallimore who was synonymous with the drinking culture that was, I'd say, rife probably in the 90s. And he tells many a story about, you know, they'd have like little Sunday sessions in the cricketers or somewhere, and all of a sudden they'd be like, Buckley's come in. And then like Tony Gallimore would have to run down into the cellar, and, you know, the landlords and landladies are like, quick, Tony, down to the cellar, close the doors. And then Alan Buckley would come in like, is he here? Like, no, he's not been in yet, Alan. Right, okay, if he does, you give me a call, okay? They're like, yeah, right, cheers, Alan. He'd go, and then straight out, you know.
It's like the Cleethorpes equivalent of a Whitehall farce.
Exactly.
So I know Chris is an Oldham fan, and we've been talking a lot about the National League and League Two at the moment, although Oldham are doing all right. But actually, a lot of clubs have done really well going down and coming up. But you had quite a strange experience, didn't you? Because when you came back up, somehow it seemed like you sold all your players or something. It was very weird.
Yeah, we had a weird situation where we came up and we had quite a lot of players that had done really well at National League level or Vanarama or whatever it was called at the time. And we didn't keep them on. So like Porrick Hammond, who scored, I think, 342 goals in one season, we decided to let him go. Nathan Arnold, who scored the kind of like the iconic goal at Wembley against Forest Green in that playoff final, he was let go. Craig Disley was let go, the captain. Sean Pearson was sent to Wrexham. Well, not sent to Wrexham, but, you know, I think he was just offered a better deal. So we lost a lot of players. And then subsequently later on, we lost Paul Hurst. And it all went downhill from there. And we had a number of various different managers, Russell Slade, Marcus Bignott, the other chap, Michael Jolly, Ian Holloway. So it was a real kind of a real weird time. You'd have thought that it would have capitalised on going up, invested in the team, but it wasn't to be. And we're now back down in the National League.
Well, it's a thing, isn't it, that that clubs, there seem to be a divide, which isn't really a divide of quality, between EFL 2, the bottom of EFL 2, and the National League. And it's an odd thing to do, to come up from the National League and think, right, we're in the big time again now. Yeah. You know, you're playing teams that are of a very similar level. You know, yeah. you don't want to be shipping out the squad that's done well below. I mean, just this season, it's noticeable how the National League have started, Stockport particularly, and Wrexham have started buying players that we couldn't afford in the EFL 2. The players that, like Ollie Palmer, for instance, at Wrexham, they bought him for 300 grand or something. And he's a player that any team in the EFL 2 would bite your hand off for.
It's interesting as well, because Ollie Palmer actually played for us in the year we didn't get promoted. So we played Bristol Rovers in the, I think it's 2014, 2015, or it might have been the one after that. But it was the year before we got promoted, we played Bristol Rovers in the playoff final. We lost on penalties. Ollie Palmer was at fault for their equalising goal, you know, but that's neither here nor there. He, I think we'd got him on loan from Mansfield. He then went and, you know, played around. Stevenage, then went on to Wimbledon. So, you know, we'd had him at our level, and I think he was looking to kind of stay on at AFC Wimbledon, but the money offer that came in from Wrexham was just unbelievable. And I think also it's quite common knowledge what him and Paul Mullin are getting on a weekly basis at National League level, which again is just... it's more than League One. Do you know what I mean? It's more than League One.
Well, yeah. Well, Paul Mullin went to Wrexham after being the top scorer in League Two, didn't he?
And and they went to Cambridge, and Cambridge absolutely could have done with him. But, you know, money talks at that level. And there are silly amounts of money, like Chesterfield buying Tishominga, £250,000 from Boreham Wood. It's like, it's just silly money. Just going back to your point, Chris, about the keeping the squad, the year that Bristol Rovers went up into League Two from the National League, they kept all but four players from that squad and then had a subsequent promotion up to League One. You know, so it's interesting. There's a few teams that have... You know, if you can do that, they've done it. Look at this, likes of Lincoln, Fleetwood, Forest Green are about to do it this season. So it's just good management from the very, very top to go, right, this is a long-term plan, not a short-term plan, and see what we do this season.
Well, apart from anything else, breaking up a squad that has had success and have played well together, it seems a retrograde step, doesn't it?
Yeah, it only works for certain teams, and those certain teams are usually in the Premier League with pockets that mean, you know, look at Chelsea, like they couldn't afford, they couldn't get Haaland, so they've just gone, oh, we'll just spend £100 100 million quid on Lukaku. Do you know what I mean? That just doesn't happen at the National League.
Not as often as it used to.
Not as often as it used to. So how Grimsby are doing in the National League now? They started well, didn't they, this season? And then they've kind of fallen away a bit and they're coming back now.
Yeah, we did. We started really well. At the beginning, like, everyone kind of wrote us off. Everyone really did write us off. Well, not wrote us off, but everyone was talking about your Stockports, your Chesterfields, your Wrexhams, your Notts Counties, the teams that had had a lot of money kind of pumped into them. And we, you know, having just come down, the likes of us and Southend were kind of written off, really. But we just got taken over. We've got new owners that happened at the back end of last season. And they're brilliant. Two incredible Grimsby Town local fans that have done amazing wonders in their personal lives and obviously earned a lot of money with becoming very successful businessmen. And so it's just transformed the club. So we had a really lovely, you know, mini renaissance at the start of the season, unbeaten in, I think, about 10. And then we then didn't win in 9. So it was like a real roller coaster. If those wins had been scattered over the season, then it wouldn't be too bad. But it was just very, like, up and down very quickly.
Yeah, but, it's interesting, isn't it? That's like lower down. That's the dream. That's the fans' dream. The local owner made good. But it's the same thing's happened at Stockport, hasn't it? Higher up the league, you're dreaming of sheikhs. You know, you're dreaming of Saudi Arabia and Dubai and those things. But lower down, the local guy who actually is invested emotionally in the club as well as financially is the dream, isn't it?
And it absolutely is. And you look at the likes of Stockport and Grimsby and clubs, you know, Boreham Wood to a certain extent. You know, the chap that's running Boreham Wood, I think he's a Chelsea fan, but it's really interesting that you get these people go, oh, finally, do you know what I mean? I'm buying the club that I'm a boyhood fan of. I'm going to put this money into it. And hopefully, you know what I mean, Hollywood superstars won't go and buy Wrexham and then pump insubordinate amounts of money into buying players that should not be played in the National League. But, you know, here we are, Chris.
Well, it's interesting just from an Oldham point of view, you know, looking, we've been, for the first half of the season anyway, looking nailed on to join you, you know. And, yes.
It's changing now.
Obviously, we've got the Chez erection is occurring now. The John Sheridan's resurrection.
Say again, sorry. John Sheridan's what?
Very close.
Yeah, very close. John Sheridan's resurrection. But yeah, I've been looking into the National League. I just discovered that, I only discovered recently that there are EFL parachute payments. I didn't even know that. And so maybe we won't go bust.
They last for 2 years. 2 years they last, and then you're on your own. So I think you do see certain teams that rely on them, and it's a good way of being able to restructure how your team operates. Not only do the parachute payments, it's obviously you stop getting the EFL money, but you stop getting the academy money as well. So money that, you know, helps players come through. You see the likes of, like, Exeter City have got an amazing academy. I'm not sure what Oldham's is like, but Grimsby, we've got a great one. Is it not, really?
I know we have, because, you know, we have a record of picking up players, because obviously where we are, any good young players are snapped up by City or snapped up by United, and what we tend to get are the lads who've been told by City and United, you know, you're not tall enough to play professional football. So whenever an academy player comes through at Oldham, he's 5'1", and he can be quite skillful, but that's our model. And this is going back all the way to when we were successful with Mike Milligan and Nick Henry, you know, with little players who were Joe Royal called yard dogs. They're the yard dogs. And we still have a yard dog model in our academy. So.
I briefly taught in Newmarket, and it was like that there. Because most honestly, because lots of the kids were kids of jockeys and stable hands. It absolutely was. And of course, the rich people who lived in Newmarket sent their kids to private schools. Yeah, yeah. So it was like all these really hard as nails little fuckers about 4'10". Anyway, you speak so passionately, Lloyd. It's wonderful about the lower leagues and, you know, and also the higher leagues too, but very knowledgeably. And yeah, you've done a lot of work in the media, obviously, about football. Does it depress you that the focus, I know it depresses us, the focus is so much on the Premier League, you know, that it's almost as if everything else is incidental?
It's, I guess the only way to really describe it is like you're walking down Regent Street in London and you see Burberry and you see Gucci and you see Prada and you see all these beautiful models and you go, I'm never going to get with them. And you just have to make your peace with it, really. Do you know what I mean? You just have to make your peace with, that's never going to happen.
They have good stuff in Primark. They do.
Yeah. It's a mess, though, isn't it?
It's not so much that Grimsby may never play in the Premier League or win the FA Cup or get into Europe. It's not so much that. It's that when you're working, that all of the work is about, you know, those top 20 clubs, or, you know, although to be fair, there's been about 60 clubs in the Premier League by now. But but that obsession and then that dismissal of lower leagues.
Yeah, and it can. What gets me as well? You get in a taxi and someone goes, "Oh, hello, mate, you're all right." Yeah, he goes, "Who do you think is going to win the Premier League this season?" I'm like, yeah. I couldn't give a shit. I honestly don't care. Yeah, like, yeah. I like what I love. I love watching football. And it upsets me that there is so much attention on these, as you say, kind of like top 4 to 6 to 10, 20 clubs. But what's great is in the modern age of social media and everyone being able to kind of have a voice and do stuff is that there are now some really good podcasts out there. There's a really good podcast called The National League that's fronted by two Torquay fans, you know, and it's really, really good information on the National League. There's Not the Top 20, which is a really good podcast which covers, you know, the Football League. Yeah. Grimsby have got a podcast, DN35. So it's, you know, there are outlets out there, but you've got to search them. But yeah, it's going to be a long time before we're in the Premier League, I think. At least 4 years.
Yeah, I did enjoy when you were doing the Premier League fan reactions thing. I did enjoy that and wondered whether, I mean, that must have had a very high replica kit budget.
Well, actually, it didn't. What I did, I basically spoke to a company called Classic Football Shirts.
Yeah.
And I just said, look, you've got hundreds of thousands of shirts. Can I just borrow 20 for this season? And uh-huh. I'll give you them back, washed or unwashed, until your choice. And so I did that. And there's a couple where I bought a few and then gave them away at the end of the season. But I tell you what, though, that was the one thing. That and doing the Fantasy Premier League on your phone, they're the two things that make you take notice of what's going on in the Premier League. So I needed to be on top of what the results were happening. So I'd watch the highlights on the Saturday, on the Sunday. Yeah. And it made me kind of like watch it a bit more.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. The very distinct London accents that you had. You had like half a dozen more because a United fan seemed to have a Cockney accent, which was great. But the very distinct London accents, I enjoyed that.
Surrey based, I think. It was so annoying when like you get like another. You look at who was going to be relegated and who was going to be promoted, and you go, "Oh, that's now six London teams." I mean, there's only so many variations I can do. And then it's the same with the Midlands as well. It's like, why does Aston Villa sound like Wolves? It's like, well, because I haven't got that much range left, so that's why.
Because it's only like 15 miles.
Yeah.
And so the time that you've got yourself a little cameo appearance on Ted Lasso, Nick mentioned at the beginning, you've got yourself a little appearance as an occasional journalist in press conferences and things. What do you think of Ted? Do you enjoy Ted Lasso as a thing?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. Even when it first came out on, I think it was NBC, it was like, oh, it's this great little character. And then they built it into a sitcom that has gone huge around the world. Like, it's unbelievable, you know, the success that it's had.
It has. I mean, when I was watching it, I kept thinking, oh, this is all wrong, you know. But then I realised that I'd been watching, you know, for half an hour with a big smile on my face. And, you know, and my face hurt at the end of it, which I couldn't quite explain satisfactorily.
There's one moment, I think, in the first episode of the first series where I have to say the word tie instead of draw.
Hey.
And the amount of stick I got from football fans just in England, be like, why would you say tie? I'm like, because it's an international audience and draw in America, I think, means drugs. Okay, all right. So that's why do you understand tie? You do. Let's move on. Okay. So, but yeah, no, it's great. And it's an amazing show. Also an amazing show on set as well. Like, everyone on set is absolutely incredible. It's just the most enjoyable thing to be a part of.
It looks like a very good-hearted thing, because it's essentially about the decency of people thrown together in a football club. It's essentially about how, you know, finding stories that show that everyone's got something good about them. You know, it's very American in that way.
It's a very lighthearted, feel-good show about positivity, and it just so happens that the football's involved as well.
Yeah, I saw a great interview with Jason Sudeikis and the guy who plays Coach Beard and a third guy in their writing room. The third guy isn't one of the, I guess he does the typing, I don't know if you've come across him, but they had series three plotted out on a whiteboard behind them with post-it notes for what was going to happen in all the episodes, and above Jason Sudeikis' head, just to one side, there was a post-it note saying Ted dies, which I thought was a very strong joke to do in a Zoom interview, you know. Anyway.
That's very good. Actually, that, I just wanted to pick up on that thing about saying tie, because that's why I find it, I've a few times I've been up for things about sports, specifically about football, and I'm just so pissed off about the inaccuracies.
I just
have to stop myself saying it. Yeah, I mean, years and years ago, there was a film called When Saturday Comes. I don't know if you remember it.
Sean Bean.
Yeah, and I went to audition for that. That was a long time ago. And they said, OK, well, this year in the dressing room, OK, and Sheffield United are going to be playing Arsenal in a reserve match. And I'm going, no, they can't, because it's the football reach. Combination and the Central League. And I had to say it, and I said it, and they just basically went, oh, fuck off.
And later in the film, Sean Bean gets to take a penalty in the semi-final of the Cup, having come on as a veteran, as a substitute, and the semi-final of the Cup is Sheffield United against, I don't give a fuck who, but it's at Bramall Lane. They don't play the semi-final of the Cup at Bramall Lane. It's just absurd. Yeah.
Yeah. But of course it does. Of course it doesn't matter, does it? It just
doesn't matter.
No, well, for the international audits,
I'm presuming, Lloyd, that you're wearing that cap to prompt me to mention your Peaky Blinders podcast that you're doing.
Well, I'm actually wearing this cap because I've got very bad hair today, and I'm losing my hair at a rate of knots. So I keep it on if I've not put all my special spells in there. So, but I mean, yeah, I absolutely. It's a good reminder. We've got this new podcast, myself and Darren Harriott. We're doing Obsessed with Peaky Blinders, which starts on the 27th of February. It's on BBC Sounds app, and it basically accompanies the final and sixth series of Peaky Blinders.
Marvellous.
Now, I'm going to ask you this, and I really want you to just say no, fuck off, if you don't want to do it.
Okay.
Because
you can say it. Because I'm aware it's a little bit of a set piece performing dog thing to us, but we know that you're a chorister.
Here we go.
I just wanted to, is there a particularly unpleasant Grimsby song that you can do in a beautiful voice for us? But seriously, if I was asked, I'd say no. But
I should say also that Nick is very keen on fishing, so he's prepared to mime the fishing while you sing.
Well, look, seeing as though there's a very large fee for this podcast, I'm more than happy to oblige. So the Grimsby have got quite a few famous chants, and just a side point, we on Easter Monday, I think 2002, we played Sheffield Wednesday at Blundell Park, and like Kevin Pressman was in goal. Like it was a big old game, and our choir went and sang beforehand, and the abuse that we got on that pitch, I cannot tell you. And the worst thing was it was started by my mates as well. So, but we actually sang "We Only Sing When You're Fishing," which is one of our famous chants. So, I'll do that. It's not, you know, "We Piss on Your Fish" is obviously the other one as well, but that's quite monotonal. So, I'll give you a couple, and you can choose which one you like. So, and also, my the guests in the Jury's Inn in Birmingham are going to think, "What the fuck is going on?" On a Thursday afternoon when I'm belting this out, okay?
We only sing when we're fishing. Sing when we're fishing. We only sing when we're fishing. We piss on your fish. Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
There you go.
Thank you so much, dude. I know what a horrible thing it is when you get asked to do something like that.
It's absolutely fine.
But we really want it. Thanks so much. You've been a great guest. Really enjoyed having you on. Good luck with your Peaky Blinders stuff. Good luck with all your football stuff. Good luck with your Ted Lasso.
Bless you.
And thank you very much. Cheers, chum.
No, thanks for having me on. Cheers.
So thank you very much to our guest, Lloyd Griffiths. Please encourage people to download the podcast. Please give your reviews, whatever you want to do. Please tweet about it or any of those other modern things that young people do. Oh, get your children to do it.
Do you want to wear this original?
Sports Social Podcast Network.